This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season. Because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
I caught up on a fair amount of entertainment in the last few days because I wasn't feeling exceptionally well. And I'm not going to have time to talk about this today, but the Osama bin Laden documentary that's on Netflix right now is incredible. It is absolutely incredible.
Really?
It's must see. It's three parts. I was blown away. Our friend Ethan Hannaford, who is our regular producer, he's a little under the weather, and I sent him a message this morning, and I said, hey, if you're looking for something to watch, he goes, oh, I binged it on Saturday.
Oh,
it was incredible. So I'm going to get into that. But we've talked with my friend John Ziegler quite a bit over the years. He has a podcast now called The Death of Journalism. John and I have known each other for a long time. There was a certain point, I can't remember how many years ago, he guided me into a really, really deep dive podcast called With the Benefit of Hindsight, which is on the Jerry Sandusky Penn State case, Joe Paterno, all that stuff. And, you know, I even said this a few minutes ago when I was promoting this. It's an uncomfortable topic to wade into because people think they know things about that. And when you dig in, and John has really dug in and he brings the receipts, there's a completely different perspective. And the reason that this is important is because a lot of the things that happened back then with that case and the media narrative that took off, very, very similar to other things that have happened recently, including this big cover-up with Joe Biden. But I invited John to come on the show, and I was going to play something first, but he's willing to sit through it, so I think I'm going to have him set it up. He had a fascinating conversation with Bob Costas. And what's interesting is the conversation with Bob Costas was for the Death of Journalism podcast, but it crossed over into the Sandusky situation because Bob was the guy that interviewed Jerry Sandusky in a very historic interview back whenever that was, 13, 14 years ago. Now, Mr. Ziegler is much better at setting these things up. John, are you there right now?
I am indeed, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. And I wanted to, and look, I'll do this at the end of our segment because I didn't want to make you sit through it because you know what he said. He tells this fascinating story about being on an airplane with Johnny Cochran and the O.J. Simpson situation, but that also crosses into everything that we're talking about as well. But let me have you sort of share the story of your relationship with Bob and how these conversations came about, because I did not listen to the podcast with The Death of Journalism. I do want to listen to that. You've offered this other portion about the Sandusky case up there for free right now. I've put it on my Twitter. It's fascinating. My opinion is it should be national news, probably, this information and these responses that come out. But you can set it up far better than I.
Well, the context here is important, and you've pointed out maybe the most significant element of this, which is that to this day, most people, when they remember the Sandusky case, they cite the interview between Bob Costas and Jerry Sandusky as the reason that they believe for sure that Jerry Sandusky was guilty of all charges and that there really was a scandal at Penn State. And I get that. I totally understand it.
Right.
And when that occurred, I did the prison interview with Jerry Sandusky after the trial. Bob's was after the arrest. Mine was after Jerry Sandusky was convicted. And Bob called me before I went on the Today Show. This was 12 years ago, to kind of compare notes. And that started, a rather interesting relationship that has gone in a lot of different directions. Bob and I have communicated, hundreds of times, maybe on dozens of different topics, but I've always tried to keep him in the loop on the Penn State Sandusky case because I really trust in Bob's judgment. I think he is a very smart person. I know a lot of your audience thinks of him as a liberal, but he's not nearly as liberal as a lot of people perceive. He and I have had discussions about that. He is he's very fair, and he's very diligent. He has followed everything I've sent him for 12 years, and he agreed to do this interview where I did not anticipate even getting into the Penn State case.
Right.
And to my great surprise, pleasantly so, he started to engage me and asking me questions about my theory, which was, you've mentioned OJ, and this is where this goes. He starts talking about OJ at the end of this 30-minute discussion. Bizarrely, we are not just both associated with the Penn State Sandusky case. We're both associated with the O.J. Simpson case for other reasons. Bob was obviously O.J.'s co-host at NBC, and I have several connections to the case that are rather bizarre. And, in a weird way, to use the O.J. analogy, this interview was a little bit like if Marcia Clark had interviewed Johnny Cochran, depending on your perspective on the case. That's how different our points of view, or at least in perception, have been. Although Bob points out during the interview, he doesn't want people to think that we're adversarial on this because we're both trying to find the truth. And so he goes into this story, which I had never heard before, to my knowledge, he's never told before, about meeting Johnny Cochran on a plane. In the context of, why his concern about why Jerry Sandusky didn't hire a dream team, and I have, I think, a very good explanation for that. And, Bob tells this very interesting story on our Death of Journalism podcast.
Well, let me hold on that just because I want to get everything else here. I just didn't want to have you. That's like a 3-minute story, so I'll wait here till the end. But as you know, because we've talked about this, you know what's interesting? I've been in St. Louis. I've been back here since 2006. I've had Bob on my show mainly to talk about some charities here in the past. He's always been great when I'm on Camo X. Camo X was his home. He's part of the Camo X family. I've never met Bob Costas in person. But about a year ago, as you know, John, he reached out to me, and he was concerned about the perception that people had here in St. Louis about what he was saying about Trump, et cetera. And we started a dialogue. And that dialogue continued pretty much up until about the assassination attempt, because the game kind of changed at that point. But what Bob was saying was he was trying to indicate, and this is true, he had been making the case about Biden and maybe even about the media not focusing on the right things about Biden for a while. And he felt like he wanted to share this with the audience. For whatever reason, we just kind of got thrown off track last year, and we didn't ever have that conversation on the air. But I found this fascinating, and I want you to kind of talk a little bit, because as I indicated here at the beginning of the hour, this whole Sandusky thing, even when you pitch this to me, you start telling me about it, I'm like, Zig, I love you, bro, but you're kind of crazy on this. But then I listen to The Benefit of Hindsight, and you, as I indicated a few minutes ago, you bring these receipts. So let's kind of start with how you get into this conversation with Bob, because you even kind of had this agreement going into this conversation that would not be a big topic of conversation, right?
Right. That's why I was surprised. Yeah. Here's what happened. I mean, I'll give you the backstory on this a little bit. I think it's just might be inside baseball, literally and figuratively, but I find it fascinating. Bob recently retired from baseball play-by-play. And he did an interview where he discussed the reasons behind that. And, I'm a huge fan of sportscasters. Bob was probably my favorite sportscaster growing up as a kid. That was my first job after college as a television sportscaster. So I kind of idolized Bob. And I felt like he did not have a full understanding of what really happened, that he was actually being too tough on himself. And so we had about an hour phone call where I explained my view of what really transpired, that he basically caught in a generation gap, and which is a whole nother story, but that then led to, hey, could you come on my podcast? Let's talk about some of this stuff. And he thought that was fine. But he said, I don't really want to talk about Penn State because I haven't followed it like you have. I said, that's fine, but I got to ask one question because we are so both associated with it. It would be ridiculous for me not to at least address it. He's like, fine. So I asked the one question, very open-ended, thinking I'm going to move on. And I've been waiting for 12 years, Mark, for Bob to get, you know, journalistically curious and start asking me questions. And shockingly, that's exactly what happened. And what ensued, I believe, and you seem to believe, and other people have listened to, seem to believe, was an extraordinary interaction between two people who are perceived as being very on very different ends of this story. And as far as the story itself, the best analogy I can make is COVID. Because in both of these situations, in the COVID panic and in the Penn State panic, the news media and the public got deeply invested in a narrative before they had all the information. And then it was impossible to reverse themselves, especially the media, because they would have to admit that they were wrong. And Bob is actually the personification of that, because Bob, when he did his interview, this Emmy-winning interview with Jerry Sandusky, which most people believe essentially put the final nail in his coffin, Bob did not. He was living in a world of misperception. It wasn't his fault. There were lots of things being reported that turned out not to be true. In fact, weren't even close to being true. And so I actually have great sympathy and empathy for Bob's situation. I have never criticized his interview with Sandusky, and I've always praised his willingness to be open-minded and learn more about it. And that's what happened in this interview.
So he won an Emmy for that interview with Jerry Sandusky, didn't he?
I believe it was an Emmy. I know he won awards for it. I believe it was an Emmy.
So he says in the beginning of this, when you kind of get into this territory, that, you know, he certainly felt prepared when he did that interview with Sandusky, but he hasn't, as you indicated, followed this story as close as you have. But he sort of admits what I think a lot of people would admit. Like, if they're just meeting you, or maybe people are just meeting you for the first time, and they're saying, wait a second, this guy is defending a known pedophile, someone who was naked in the shower with football players at Penn State. How is that even possible? I think I know the story. I heard the Bob Costas interview. This guy's guilty. So it's very uncomfortable for people to even open their eyes to any alternative universe.
Well, I agree with that 100%, but in actuality, that's how this kind of an injustice happened.
Yeah.
Because even good people, even smart people, didn't want to bother wading into this horrible story, or once they did and realized there was a lot more to it, got scared and ran away. And there's no self-interest in this for anybody, especially when they look what's happened to my life and career. My life and career have been largely destroyed by this story. I didn't want this. I fought this for 2 years. I tried to prove Sandusky was guilty after I interviewed him in prison for 3.5 hours the first time. I couldn't come close to doing it. Then as I got deeper and deeper into it, I'm realizing, this isn't even close. I mean, like, I don't even lose a second of sleep about this case because I know I'm right. It's not even close. It's like today is Monday. Yet because of the perfect storm, and because the media is so broken, and because of the nature of the story, and everyone being, you know, understandably very offended by it, and the ick factor and the toxicity of it, it's an impossible story to fix. Especially when the entire state of Pennsylvania is deeply invested, much like we were in COVID, in a false narrative, and nobody has the guts to go up against it.
Yeah, so he brings up, at one point in this conversation, he brings up Trump and the Steele dossier, and I think he kind of makes the point that, you know, and this would be a natural human reaction when you're being fed this stuff by the media. Well, where there's smoke, there's got to be fire, right?
I get that, and I addressed that with Bob. I mean, this is a story where there's a lot of smoke. But when you delve into it, which no one wanted to do, largely because if you remember this story, my biggest point to Bob, which I pound constantly, is he, along with lots of other people in the media, got distracted by the Joe Paterno aspect of it. Joe Paterno was the legendary head coach at Penn State who got fired like 3 or 4 days into the story. It was perceived that Penn State was pleading guilty, and therefore nothing else mattered, especially after Bob's interview with Sandusky was perceived as going so poorly. But in my view, everybody focused on whether or not there was a cover-up involving Joe Paterno, and nobody delved into the actual alleged crimes, which make no sense at all, have no evidence behind them when there should be mountains of evidence. And the way the whole story has turned out in the last 12 years, 13 years, really, since it blew apart publicly, nothing is consistent with what you would expect. Like, for instance, Jerry never pled guilty. He never plea bargained. He's never been harmed in prison. He's never self-harmed. That's impossible for a serial pedophile of his infamy in this day and age. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Bob brings up something. He even, you know, pushes back on you. He says something about this janitor who was an eyewitness. But then you know all about the janitor, right?
Well, this was, to me, the most interesting part of the and the most telling part of the interview, because I referenced that there was only one witness that was an accuser. Most people probably remember the name Mike McQuarrie, and there's massive problems with the McQuarrie episode, including the date being wrong, I believe, twice. And Bob jumps in and says, wait a minute, there's more than one witness. What about the janitor? And this was where I think it proves my point, where Bob was living in a November 2011 reality and stopped following the Sandusky part of this. I totally get why. When we get to trial, we find out, guess what? There is no janitor. The janitor never testifies. Why? Because he had given a statement to prosecutors saying emphatically that he had never seen Jerry Sandusky anywhere near this alleged episode. So they ended up they claimed they were going to use two hearsay witnesses. I don't even know how they convinced the judge to use a hearsay witness. They promised two of them. They produced one of them. That one hearsay witness changed the location. There's no date. There's no accuser. The whole thing stinks.
Yeah, what I would say, you know, for people listening, because I was as skeptical as anyone, if you listen even to the first few episodes of this podcast, you will understand how this thing got so out of control at the narrative. Now, this is unfair of me to do, John. I want to take a break, though. Will you continue with me after the break?
Because yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. I want you to set up the O.J. Simpson story, because it relates with all this media nonsense out there. We'll take a break. We're coming back here. Hang in there. A little bit more here with my friend John Ziegler, who and John, maybe it's a good time just to explain the differences between the two podcasts, because they cross-pollinated here with Bob Costas, but it's weird, right? But with the benefit of hindsight, that's a deep dive into the Sandusky case. It's how many parts? It's multi parts.
This is now our 20th episode. They're all extremely long. I think the average episode is about 3.5-4 hours long. 20 episodes I Freudian slip there, with the benefit of hindsight. And now I do a podcast called The Death of Journalism on a weekly basis. And so what we did was we took an hour-long interview that Bob Costas did on The Death of Journalism, took the half hour that was about the Penn State case, and turned it into a new episode with the benefit of hindsight.
But what happened with Sandusky, we've seen it, COVID, we've seen now this cover-up with Biden. There are all these things that I think a lot of people out there don't realize are happening. I try to share this, you try to share it, some other people do, but they don't even realize how this big media monster works. And when something takes on a life of its own, like Sandusky and Paterno, this is what happens. And that's what happened with COVID, too.
I think it's all about the groupthink. And it really goes to the lack of courage in today's news media. No one wants to lose their job. No one wants to lose their reputation. The easiest way to do that is to go outside of the herd or the pack on a very controversial or toxic story. COVID and Sandusky clearly fit that description. So no one was going to go up against the grain on this. When I did, I got destroyed, but yeah. I'm a little bit different breed of cat, and I have a lot less to lose. And this is not my first rodeo.
No.
I've been through this kind of thing multiple times before. I know how to navigate it a little bit better than most people do. So I do think that groupthink plays a huge role in this, and kudos to Bob Costas for at least trying not to fall prey to that, because he has no self-interest in revisiting this case at all, probably less than anybody in the mainstream news media, and yet he's always been very open-minded and willing to engage, as he was in the interview that I did with him.
So one of the things he says to you is, you know, I think he says, John, and this is a good question, if you're right about all this stuff, why wouldn't there be attorneys lined up to represent Sandusky on appeal? Why wouldn't there be a clamor to do that, right?
Right.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals. But you're scrolling your phone, and maybe you're in bed. Because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you'd get at the store. Like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt, or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
That's when I bring up OJ, yes. Because obviously we both, he has a connection to the OJ case. I have a connection to the OJ cases, which is very different. OJ is probably the most famous defendant in American history, period, but certainly the one most famous for hiring a dream team. And I explained to Bob the differences that are very integral to understanding the two cases, the differences between O.J. and Jerry Sandusky. O.J. had like the best kind of celebrity, and Jerry Sandusky had the worst kind of celebrity because people in the sports world knew who he was, but he had no following. He'd been retired for a long time. He certainly wasn't a star, but his story was important enough in the minds of the sports media to make it into a huge deal, especially once it got Joe Paterno in such trouble. And so that led Bob to tell this fascinating story of him meeting Johnny Cochran on an airplane.
So let me play that right now, because this is, and it runs a couple of minutes. You're going to hang with me here while I do this?
Yep, absolutely.
All right, here we go.
I find myself on a flight sometime around 1997, 98, somewhere in there, from St. Louis, where I lived most of my adult life, to LaGuardia in New York. And as I sit down on the aisle and at the window, is Johnny Cochran, whom I'd never met. And this was the one and only time we crossed paths. So he says hello first. Say, hi, Bob. How are you? Johnny, nice to meet you. We shake hands. So the flight's like 2.5 hours, during which time we're each reading our paper or our book, but we make small talk and it's all about sports. Now the plane is descending into LaGuardia. And I say, Johnny, indulge me for just a moment here. I know you must deal with this stuff on a daily basis and I didn't want to bother you. So I just have one question. Why, especially in closing arguments, do you think the prosecution never said the following? The defense has asked you to believe in a widespread conspiracy to frame an innocent man. Let's assume, for the purposes of this argument, for just a moment, that the most malign intentions of the LAPD are at work here. How do they know, since by definition here they're framing an innocent man, how do they know that O.J. Simpson doesn't have an ironclad alibi? How do they know he's not in Philadelphia or he's not at dinner with 10 people who will vouch for his whereabouts at that time? As this conspiracy comes together, they don't know that he doesn't have an ironclad alibi. And since, by definition, this is the scenario that's been outlined here, these people didn't kill themselves. How do they know that exculpatory evidence won't immediately appear, or that someone shows up in a bus depot someplace with blood all over their shoes, or if more than one person is involved, someone doesn't break ranks and confess, or if this conspiracy among the police involves more than two or three people, that somebody, some link in that chain doesn't break either out of a pang of conscience or for money and fame? How do they know? Let's assume that every one of them is completely immoral. How do they know? They're policemen, they work in there. How do they know that any of those things might not happen at any given time? And here's what Johnny Cochran said. I was expecting them to say that very thing, Bob, and I'm surprised but happy that they didn't. And then I said, well, Johnny, given everything, it might not have mattered. And then he said, verbatim, "Bob, I didn't create the facts of that case. I just worked with them." And I said, "And brilliantly." We shook hands, and that was it.
That's a fascinating story there. And did he say he'd never shared that before? Maybe he had. I'd never heard it before.
I've never heard of it before, but unfortunately, you cut off what to me is the best part of that exchange, which is my retort, which is, I think, pretty darn good. Because I said to Bob, first of all, I wish you'd been on the prosecution team. And then secondly, I said, O.J. Simpson hired Johnny Cochran because he knew he was guilty. Yeah. Jerry Sandusky hired his buffoon of an attorney, Joe Amendola, because he knew he was innocent. And judging from Bob's expression when I said that, I think it left a mark. Because that's really the comparison of the two cases encapsulated as well as I could possibly do so in one sentence.
And you said in closing on the podcast that even Bob himself, you feel, was a victim of the media firestorm, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Because you have to understand that the circumstances that were created in that panic, it was so huge. I don't know if everyone remembers how big a deal this was in November of 2011. This was a moral panic. That's why I continue to use the COVID example. The COVID example was effectively a moral panic, and you weren't allowed to say, wait a minute, masks don't work, or why are we mandating vaccines and social distancing and closing schools? Shut up. This is a panic.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to do that. Well, the circumstances honestly could not be more similar. And I have to say that the only good thing about the COVID panic was that at least to a certain segment of the population, mostly conservatives, it's now a lot easier for me to make my argument because a lot of people go, oh, I can totally see that given how the news media acted in unison on the COVID panic. And now that we know all the facts all these years later regarding the Sandusky Paterno Penn State case, an extraordinarily similar thing happened there in November 2011. But unfortunately, we can't correct it because of the perfect storm of circumstances and a broken news media. But Bob Costas, to his credit, has stood out as an exception to that rule.
You know, whenever I talk about that case and your podcast and Sandusky, and look, it's not, dinner conversation. You don't want to bring that up because people think you're nuts. But one of the things that I find interesting, and I think you mentioned it in this conversation, you became very close before he passed away with Franco Harris. And that's kind of an interesting
angle. Harris. Franco Harris, for people who don't remember, Pittsburgh Steeler, Immaculate Reception, Hall of Famer, a mountain of a man. He died a day before the 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception. I miss him every single day. He and I became extremely close. And Franco Harris, before he died, put together a podcast. I helped him with it, where he described what happened at Joe Paterno's funeral when he confronted one-on-one, mano-a-mano, the only witness in the case, Mike McQuarrie,
mm-hmm.
and asked Mike McQuarrie point-blank, right to his face, "What did you see?" And Franco Harris, in extraordinary detail, tells the story of how he became convinced that Mike McQuarrie did not see or witness
anything close
to a sexual assault.
Right.
And Franco Harris, if you know anything about him, was a mountain of a man who was incapable of lying. I would have trusted him with my life. I was in multiple foxholes with him. He was a great human being, and I don't say that very often because I have a very dim view of human beings, but Franco Harris left a gift for us in the podcast that he created. I sent that to Bob Costas with very specific time codes, and to Bob's credit, he listened to the whole thing, which is not that easy to listen to Franco because Franco is a little slow, a little bit of a slow talker, but Franco told the truth, and Bob listened to the whole thing.
So just as we wrap up here, I want to point out the differences in the podcast. The Death of Journalism, you're continuing to do, and I have not heard that portion of the conversation with Bob. Can you sum that up and tease us a little bit? Because I definitely want to follow up on that.
Oh, you got to listen to that because we talk in great detail about his decision to leave baseball play-by-play. about the news media in general, how things have changed with social media. And, you know, one of the best parts about the fact that we got a little sidetracked on Penn State is that Bob ended the conversation, which is a little bit over an hour long, by saying, let's do it again, because we didn't get to everything that we planned on. So I'm going to be interviewing Bob again probably in early July, and we'll put that on social media as well.
Well, what I loved about the portion that, and again, you can find this on my Twitter site, at Mark Reardon, KFTK. We can guide you into where it is on the podcast. But it was such a great conversation because he had good questions. You had great points. I have so much respect for you because I know how much work you've put into this case. And I've listened to, now, John, I'm not going to lie, I haven't listened to all of it with the benefit of hindsight.
Right.
But I know that you bring the goods. And it's undeniable when you hear the facts of this case that it was all manufactured. And there are different reasons why it was manufactured. There were politics, inside politics at Penn State. I mean, Joe Paterno becomes a big case. It's such a complicated case. It really is. And maybe that's why most of the mainstream media never touches it.
Well, there's a lot of reasons. Ignorance is a big part of it. Cowardice is a big part of it. And as far as why the interview, the discussion, the conversation with Bob was so good, it's because we've laid the groundwork over 12 years. I mean, Bob and I have gotten to know each other pretty well. We trust each other. We know each other. You know, I don't think that Bob would have put up with somebody he didn't know going in some of the places that I went. But because he's gotten to know me pretty well, he gave me more latitude, and I took it. And what ensued was pretty extraordinary.
So guide people in best way to the podcast if you want to check any of this out.
Well, you know, go to my Twitter feed, John Ziegler's Twitter feed, or my Facebook page, or the Death of Journalism podcast, or if you want the free version of part of which we just played about the Penn State case, go to With the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, one of the things that was interesting during that conversation about Sandusky is you talk about how, you know, the lawyers get involved, the investigators get involved, and then they do, I think you refer to it as a sweep, and they're fishing in a pond, and all these people that they talk to, they find six guys, right? Six guys, four of whom are very close friends.
That is maybe the most amazing fact of the whole deal. Yes, at the time of Jerry Sandusky's arrest, after hundreds of interviews with people who had gone to Jerry Sandusky's charity, The Second Mile, from broken homes, probably experienced real abuse, they probably experienced divorce, are from bad marriages, probably unemployed, they're all adult males. They do these interviews basically luring them to make an accusation or an allegation against Jerry Sandusky. Only six do. Four of them were friends, all pictured together with their names in Jerry Sandusky's book, with no objection to being used with their name in photo. Can you just imagine if you were being sexually abused by Jerry Sandusky and Jerry put out a book with your name and photograph? Wouldn't you at least object? Hey, what are you doing? I don't want to be in your book. Nothing like that. Because what happened here was there were six guys who figured out, with the help of lawyers and therapists, this could be pretty good for me, the way this is going.
It is unbelievable. I'm going to listen to the rest of the podcast. Thank you so much. I know it took a little bit more time than we thought, but thanks, Zig. I appreciate it.
Anytime, Mark. You're the best.
I'm going to listen to more of it. I'm telling you, listen to the podcast. You think some of the stuff is off? It's really compelling. It really is. We're coming back. Audio cut of the day.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hosting season's here. Are your windows guest ready? Early access to Blinds.com's Memorial Day Mega Sale is on now. Save up to 40% site-wide and get a free measure. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. 100% online with upfront pricing. No showroom markups, no pushy salespeople in your home. Whether you're a DIY warrior, prefer the white glove treatment, or somewhere in between, Blinds.com can help. Our design experts can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. Plus, we can even handle everything from measure to install. Style every room effortlessly with classic shutters for living spaces, blackout for bedrooms, motorized options for ease, shades for your patio too. With over 25 million windows covered and 40,000 five-star reviews, Blinds.com is the trusted name in custom window treatments, all backed by our 100% satisfaction guarantee. Early access to Blinds.com's Memorial Day Mega Sale is happening now. Shop and save up to 40% site-wide, plus a free measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.